Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Kevin Nally, the Secret Service's Chief Information Officer. Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time, and in some ways, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Jason.
So it's been a couple of years since you've been on the show, and when you were on the show, you were the Marine Corps CIO. Today, you're the Secret Service CIO. So let's start right there with the transition from the Marine Corps to the Secret Service. Talk a little bit about that transition, and what's been your biggest challenge or learning curve?
Before I answer that, I just want to go on record to say that the Secret Service beat the FBI in our annual hockey game.
Well, that's important to know because
it's a charity game, but we won. So I have to stress that. So we are the premier law enforcement agency.
Bragging rights are important.
Yep. All right. Now, I think the transition is extremely easy in terms of the culture. I mean, this is a paramilitary organization, so it's very similar to the Marine Corps. And it is the premier law enforcement agency. The mission is actually what brought me to the organization, protection and intelligence. And the people here are very mission-focused with finding high-quality people to fill the ranks and work here. And I'm extremely impressed with the professionalism and dedication of the men and women that work here in the Secret Service, much in par with the Marine Corps. So one of the biggest challenges was being efficiently and effectively combining two separate organizations. One used to be called IRM, Information Resources Management Division, and I'll get into that in one of your later questions here. It was not aligned properly, and the director, Mr. Clancy, at the time said, fix it. So I did, and I can get into that more later, but it just took some leadership, transparent communications among senior staff, and most importantly, building trust their delegated approach to mission accomplishment. And as I went through that process, I got buy-in from key stakeholders in terms of what I wanted to do. And one of the hallmarks, as you know, of being a Marine is trained as you would fight, and most importantly, powering the subordinates to make decisions and backing them along the way. And but again, the people here are so mission-focused and dedicated, it's just fascinating to come to work here every day.
Definitely want to get into the consolidation or the efficiency and effectiveness of combining the two organizations. But I guess my interesting around the transition, it's a new mission. It's not a mission that maybe you've ever experienced as much or as in different ways with the Marine Corps. Was there a process by which you went through, again, meeting people, going out into the field? How did you ensure that you as the CIO understood the mission to support it instead of obviously throwing technology for technology's sake, which as I've heard many times, you never want to do?
And I did, again, talk to key stakeholders here. I did some research before I got here in terms of, you know, when the Secret Service was founded, what their missions are, did as much background as I could. And then the other couple other benefits, too, is in this office of the CIO, I have 12, 18, 11s that work with me, and they're all agents, experienced agents, GS 14s and 15s. So I interacted and still interact with them every day. And then one of my senior agents took me out to some field offices to see firsthand what the field office's mission was in terms of protection and intelligence and what their IT requirements and desires were. So that was beneficial. And then the other thing that we do is they're called National Special Security Events. We call them NSSEs. So those are dictated by Congress, DHS, et cetera. For example, the Republican National Convention, the Democratic National Convention, the Pope's visit, the United Nations General Assembly, big events like that that we are in charge of. And so all the agencies around the country fall under us. For example, state, local, federal law enforcement agencies come under us, CBP, ICE, some parts of DOD, depending on the size of the National Special Security Event, and then we coordinate that. And I equate that, from my perspective, as putting together a command and control network for a four-star joint task force in military terms. So I learn something every day, but I still have 12 good agents that work with me, and I look at them as the infantry, and they tell me what the operational requirements are, and we go from there.
Very interesting. Now, I think probably the best visit, as you said, is taking those agents that work with you every day and taking you to a field office. What did you learn about those field offices, generally speaking? I mean, were you surprised? Were you impressed in terms of not just the people, but the from the IT perspective?
No, I wasn't impressed. I mean, I was impressed with the people, but to me, same IT challenges we deal with in the Marine Corps, trying to meet the customer's requirements, especially, I would probably say mostly with mobile kinds of things. As the agents work out in the field away from the office, we got to keep them tied back to the office and back to the headquarters here. So those are some of the challenges right now that we're trying to work through to keep up with modern IT types of mobile devices and equipment, and then meet the needs of the agents in the field.
And I know that I think we'll get into the mobile later on in the conversation as part of your priorities. One last kind of look back at your background a little bit now. Your time as the Marine Corps CIO, and you jumped to Secret Service after you retired. Did you look at other positions? Did you consider other, if you will, even non-federal positions? Or was this just the right place, the right time, perfect fit for you?
Kind of both. After being a Marine for 34 years, I've always been very practical, and I never desired large corporate salaries or nice cars or big houses or material types of things. I always did look for a job that would provide value to me, and I look at value to me is giving something back to the organization or to the country. So I got kind of disenchanted with some companies that I was interviewing with because it was all about the almighty dollar, and that doesn't provide me any value. So it's just been a great fit for me, both personally and professionally. I enjoy coming to work here every day, and they're very efficient. For example, I interviewed on a Friday, came back the next Friday for another interview with the director and deputy director and chief operating officer the following Friday. The director, Mr. Clancy, personally called me around 1400 and offered me a job.
So 3 weeks. Wow.
Yeah, it's been well worth it.
Exactly. So great experience so far. One of the things, as you said, there's a lot of similarities between the Marine Corps and the Secret Service. Anything that surprised you, anything in terms of the preparation that you had as 34 years as a Marine that you brought over to the Secret Service, and anything that you can point to and say, wow, because of this experience I had with the Marine Corps, this transfers, you know, directly to the Secret Service. Give me a sense of just as you walked in, we talked about the learning curve and the transition, but how prepared did you think you were for this new civilian role?
Well, I felt I was really prepared because, again, it's, you know, Marine Corps military, Secret Service is a premier law enforcement agency, and it's paramilitary. And it was just really an easy transition because Marines look at what we do, something bigger and larger than, it's not about us, it's about the nation. And then the agents and the uniformed division officers look at it the same way. They don't do this for the money. They do it for a sense of purpose and to give something back. So it was, that really made it an easy transition.
And that's good because I know a lot of times people, they can take time to have to learn the culture. They have to learn the mission areas. And then there's IT on top of all of that. I imagine what I've heard from CIOs who've moved from one agency to another that have similar missions. In the end, IT becomes IT. Did you have to learn anything about the civilian world in terms of the policies, the regulations, the compliance issues? Or was that stuff kind of already built in because, again, IT is IT?
Well, sort of it's already built in, but all that process works basically the same way as it does in the Pentagon. We still have an acquisition process. I just can't go out and buy something just because I like it. The process is virtually the same. So that wasn't new. I think probably the newest thing was just understanding different requirements for different organizations and then going after it.
All right, good. I mean, I think one of the things is when the transitions are easy, you can get started on things a lot sooner. Kevin, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into some of those priorities, talk about that consolidation you mentioned. My guest is Kevin Nally, the Secret Service's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Kevin Nally, the Secret Service's Chief Information Officer. Now, Kevin, before the break, we talked a lot about your transition from the Marine Corps as being the CIO over there, plus your 34 years of service to the country. Let's talk a little bit about when you came in. You mentioned earlier on in our conversation about one of the big changes you made was the merging, if you will, the consolidation of two offices into one. You mentioned one was the IRM. The other one was, I imagine, the CIO's office, or give me some background on what you did and what kind of benefits are you seeing today?
When I got here November 2015, one of the first things Mr. Clancy, former director, told me, basically, fix it. It's broke. I got emphasis on this, and I'll back you up. So IRM was under a different assistant director, and the CAO office here had approximately 8 to 10 people. So I went around and interviewed, talked to some key stakeholders, got some buy-in, laid out a plan, briefed the assistant directors, then briefed Mr. Clancy and the deputy and the chief operating officer, and said, to be a CIO, this is what I recommend and I need to have happen. So he agreed to everything I presented, one which was to take all of IRM and move it underneath the CIO. Two was that I had direct oversight on all IT spending. And then three was I would be the only designated approving authority for FSBA systems. And so he gave me the authority for all those three things. So that was the first big thing. And that happened late December 2015, early January 2016.
So it's been just over a year since this happened. How big of a change has it meant, and what kind of differences are you seeing? I know you potentially weren't even here previously, you know, to see what some of the challenges were, but all IRM under CIO, oversight over all IT spending, and then the approval authority for all FSBA systems. What are you hearing, or what are you seeing in terms of changes?
I think the two biggest things are on that, on the change, is number one, subsequent to that, I wrote a strategic plan and got that approved by the front office, and my folks told me, continue to tell me, that this is the first time we've had a plan in a long time. So we're focused. I created five divisions, and I put GS-15s in charge of four of them, and Special Agent Russ Wilson, my SAC, is in charge of IT operations. So it's actually paid big dividends. The other assistant directors like it the way we support them, and we focus on the 1811s and uniformed division officers on their requirements, and I don't think they've had that for a long time.
Now, when you talk about five divisions, go through each of those five if you can and talk about how they support your customers.
Okay, so I have a cybersecurity division, program management office division, IT ops, enterprise architecture / governance and policy, and then the fifth one is IT customer relations, which is where all my 1811s are embedded, and then they are spread out to support each assistant director and his or her office in terms of meeting their requirements. So they feel like they have a voice, and I think that's made a huge difference.
And just to be clear, 1811s are special agents?
Special agents.
Just in case people aren't familiar with the lingo.
That's good. The special agents are 1811s, and they do protection and investigative work. And then the uniformed division officers are the ones that guard and protect the 18 acres, which is what we refer to the 18 acres, which is around the White House.
Now, each of those divisions previously was some of these divisions or some of these functions, whether they were in their own division, under IRM and some under the CIO, or how did it break down before you made this consolidation, made these changes?
Well, when I got here, I asked to meet with my staff and realized I only had about 8 to 10 people, and they were doing the best they could, great people, but they didn't have the other bodies or support from the front office that I was able to obtain. And that's why Mr. Clancy, the former director, said, hey, what do you need to be a good CIO? I know it needs fixed, so I'm bringing you in here to fix it.
Which one of these are new? Did the Secret Service not have, for instance, a governance or an enterprise architecture before, or a program management office before? Imagine they had cyber.
Yes, they had cyber. They had governance, which was under the CIO, but it consisted of one person. The rest, the way IRM was organized, everything came under IT ops. So I said, look, I need a better span of control, and this is basically the same kind of structure and organizational process that I used when I was a CEO at the CIO at the Marine Corps.
And the other piece of this that you mentioned was the IT strategic plan. Can you just briefly go through that? What are some of the high-level things you're trying to accomplish? And that I imagine will lead us into the discussion around priorities as well.
Well, there's five goals in it. First one being people. Second is innovative technology. Three is help desk and service delivery. 4 is governance and policy, and 5 is cybersecurity.
And again, going back, these go back to some of those 5 divisions you set up. And then are you also looking at these goals more holistically, meaning innovation and people aren't just the people within the CIO's organization, but people and innovation throughout the entire Secret Service?
Correct. On innovative technology, it's basically what I'd like to have is the capability and capacity to seamlessly interact from any location for any person, any organization with real-time information, and by providing the right information to the right person at the right time for mission success.
And I know we'll talk about innovation later on as well, but sometimes if you don't make innovation as your priority, it gets lost. If you just say, well, we'll do it within IT ops or we'll do it within enterprise architecture, is that maybe part of the reason why you really wanted to highlight the need for innovation as part of your strategic plan?
Yes, and that's why I'm fortunate to have 1811s, the 12 of them that work with me in terms of this is what the agents need out in the field.
Interesting. And I think that's the key piece that you keep going back to is having the people who've been in the field and understand what's needed and are able, as you said, working with each of the assistant directors to understand what their mission area needs as well. Is that the key contact between your office and the field is those 1811s, but also in this innovation capability?
Yes.
All right, well, let's talk a little about some of those priorities. You kind of glanced over some a little bit, so let's talk more wholly. What are you trying to get done over the next 6 or 9 months to improve the Secret Service's IT infrastructure and tools and applications?
Okay, well, we have several mission-based IT initiatives that are being worked, and one of the biggest ones right now is the Joint Operations Center, or the JOC, that supports our White House protective mission. So we're upgrading it to make it more modern. So that's in the process. We're also upgrading the National Capital Region with new radios and antennas to be able to better collaborate with Metropolitan Police Department, FBI, Customs, and Border Protection, and various other governmental agencies within the region. And we're also filling in some of the gaps, too, with that. So those are probably 2 of the biggest ones. We're also researching additional mobile devices and how we can and will become operating system agnostic, so we can have applications and programs on any type of platform. And another, probably lastly, the other big one we call EC, Enabling Capabilities, which is where we're converging our voice, video, and data networks over a converged IP infrastructure into our own private cloud. And in support of this, we're building a new Network Operations Security Center, which will be manned 24/7 in the very near future.
All right, plenty to dig into there. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll dig into some of those initiatives and some of those priorities. My guest is Kevin Nally, the Chief Information Officer at the Secret Service. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Kevin Nally, the Chief Information Officer of the Secret Service. Now, Kevin, before break, we were talking a little bit about your priorities. You went through each of them. The last one was most interesting to me. There's a lot going on among them all, but the enabling capabilities, convergence of voice, video, data over a secure IP, private cloud. Talk a little bit about that effort, where you are with it, and then what types of benefits do you expect to see, you know, as that gets up and running?
Well, we'll be fully operational, capable, or meet the goals by late FY18. Basically, it consolidates 4 separate networks, voice, video, data, and radio, to operate over a network. So we'll have improved bandwidth, faster network access, reduced downtime. Laptops, smartphones, and tablets can be used or will be able to be used for video conferencing, reducing the cost of lease lines. Number 2, implements enterprise Wi-Fi throughout Secret Service CONUS locations here in the United States. So they'll have the ability to connect to our network without being tethered to Ethernet cable. High-speed storage, we're adding 3 petabytes. We're going to integrate the Network Operations Security Center, which I touched on, implement new and optimized security tools for example, host intrusion prevention systems, upgrades firewalls will be HSPD-12, which is PIV compliant, which we are now, but we're working toward a single sign-on with that, some with our legacy applications. We're going to implement new and optimized service desk 24/7, and improved ticketing system, and then implement new and optimized asset and configuration management tools. So on a big picture wise, that's what that entails.
Is a lot of this also being done through, if you will, Agile? There's a lot of talk in government about Agile.
You bet.
Yep. Talk a little bit about that effort.
It's awesome. And I'll tell you why Agile development is awesome from our perspective is that it gets the user involved up front throughout the entire process. So if the user recommends a tweak here or there or likes this, doesn't like this, we can correct that and implement that rather than, you know, doing the old waterfall effect where it's done, here it is, and then, oh, I don't like this. So it's working out really, really well.
Now, was this something, was this skill sets that you had when you came in, not you, General Nally, but of course the staff, or did you have to hire and train people to build up to this bigger effort?
We did both, hired people that are Agile trained and developed some in-house Agile workforce. I'll give you one example where it's really paying off. It's called UDRMS, Uniform Division / Resource Management System, which is giving the UD officers real-time information to scheduling leave, scheduling time off, and training schedules. So when I got here, I went down to visit the UD office down at near the White House, and they gave me a brief on their current scheduling system. It was literally, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but about a binder about 3 feet thick, and officers couldn't schedule a day off or a medical appointment more than 3 days in advance. Now they can do this on their phone. So it's, we're almost FOC, which will be next month, and it's just an awesome software system that the UD officers really like.
And you think something like that is so straightforward and so simple, like why wouldn't the Secret Service changed, you know, years and years ago, but sometimes it's inertia, sometimes it's money, it's resources. What was the reaction that you're getting as you're testing this out and showing people, hey, look, you can now schedule appointments a month out or 2 months out or however long you need it to be?
When I see UD officers, sometimes I'll ask them, hey, how do you like the new system? You get nothing but accolades. And then every month I sit in on an updated meeting about where UDRMS stands in the process, and there's always officers in the meeting, and there's two officers dedicated full-time to the development of this program as well. So nothing but accolades, and if there is a hiccup or something's not right, you know, I get to hear it firsthand, and we get to fixing it.
One of the things you mentioned about Agile, which I'm sure is the same with this UDR system, is this idea of getting user feedback quickly. How have you set up that user feedback, the customer experience? Is it going through those assistant directors and those 1811s, or how are you doing it?
Well, for the UD officers, it goes specifically right to the UD officers. So as the system is being built, I have two full-time UD officers on my staff that are developing this and working it, and those are ones that would actually use it in real life if they weren't working for me temporarily. And then as the new sprint is being rolled out, we get several UD officers to come in and play with the system to see if it works based on how they want it to work and what information and data it provides them. So you get user buy-in up front, and people, I think, like that.
And what about some of those other systems that you're working through, whether it's the enterprise Wi-Fi, though that's kind of, I guess, straightforward. But you're talking about converged networks. I'm sure there's applications that are going to run on those networks. Are you getting other kind of user experience agents to come in and to help you out?
Yes. And the other good piece of it is working with DISA. We have JITIC working with us as well to do some of the user interface and testing, both from an operational and a cybersecurity look at it. So it's a good team effort.
That's so important to bring in not just the people, but the idea of people who understand how to deal with user testing. I think so many times that gets kind of left out of the shuffle. Obviously, that's your experience in the Marine Corps, is bringing Marines, have them test it out, make sure it's the right thing to do. Because when you talk about systems in the Marine Corps, it's very similar to systems in the Secret Service. You know, sometimes, you know, it's more than just time and attendance. It's a matter of life and death in mission and mission success. Is that where you first learned Agile, or is this Agile something that you as you brought with you, it just made sense? It was an experience issue.
Brought part of it with me, but I inherited here as well, and then we built that Agile piece out even more by getting other people Agile trained. For example, when we develop systems or an application, we take a 5-step approach to it. We well, six actually, help the user define the requirement, and then we develop it, and then we test it, and then in-house with by folks, and then we do what we call user acceptance. And then if the user accepts it, we produce it and then deliver it.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You wonder why it took so long for the government or any organization not to use it previously. But I hear it all the time from CIOs who tell me it's working. Another piece of this is the cloud. You mentioned that you guys are building a private cloud. Is there any thought? Are you looking at the public cloud or some kind of hybrid setup?
No, not looking at commercial cloud. We're going to keep it in-house, our own private cloud. So we're about 85-90% done building it out with several commercial companies help, but due to the sensitivity of the information that we gather within the Secret Service, it's just best not to put it out there.
And I think people understand that. I know people have talked about the high baseline for FedRAMP and things like that, but you know, I think there's definitely a bunch of agencies that I've talked to have said, yeah, even the high baseline is not quite there for us. We need something that's, you know, we want to be able to control it a little bit. And it's a pretty big culture change too, I can only imagine for a lot of agencies. Another priority you didn't mention, but I could only guess it is one, is around big data and the challenges of dealing with all the data that comes in and processing them. How are you addressing that big data challenge?
That word big data is to me like the word cloud. So when I got to DC in 2010, as you know, the word the cloud was, you know, the catch-all, and now it's kind of transformed into the big data challenge. So I kind of have a hard time dealing with the term big data. I mean, to me, it's just a lot of data. But we have a few data sharing projects going on within the Secret Service. Recently, we've begun using tools like Cognos to better help us assess things like workforce planning and retention, to include working in the enterprise financial system and some of the investigative systems that we use. And then we continue to always seek out better ways to facilitate decision-making based on our investigative and integrated protective missions.
I understand, like, the workforce and retention. I think that's key because I know that the turnover in the Secret Service, while it may not be high, there are mandatory retirements and things of that nature. But when it comes to decision-making, I think that's the key piece that a lot of agencies are starting to look at. Are you able to talk a little bit about how you're delivering those capabilities to either agents in the field or your bosses, you know, the assistant directors and the directors?
Through the use of Cognos, we allow the agents on the investigative side to do criminal investigations and counterfeit investigations and other types of cybercrime investigations. They like the tool Cognos because it allows them to do some programming and helps them make decisions, or at least provides them an option of decisions, I should say.
And I think those types of tools, as we've talked about it previously, there's a growing kind of use, whether it's that vendor or however many other vendors there are out there that does this, that there's a growing look to, okay, how can we deal with the data better? How can we understand it better? I enjoyed I don't like the term big data, it's just a lot of data. Are you seeing an increase? Because you talked about earlier on with the EC project, more storage. So you guys imagine every investigation, every mission area is seeing a huge increase in data.
Crime will always be out there. So, and as you know, probably better than I do, with the Internet of Things, there's just more and more work to be done on the investigative side in terms of criminal activity out there in the Internet. I mean, for people's exploitation, everything from counterfeit to financial crimes, child porn. I didn't realize how much there was out there until I took this job. For example, I'm being kind of quasi-cynical, but the only ATM machine I use is the one in this building.
That's cynical, but also careful. You understand, you know, your role as a CIO and your role at the Secret Service, you understand just what can happen and what will happen. And actually, that's a great segue to my next question is around cybersecurity. One of the things you mentioned when you talked about, again, the EC effort was new security tools, intrusion prevention systems, upgrading firewalls. Can you talk a little bit about cybersecurity more broadly, about in terms of how this is impacting you as the CIO and the mission you're helping to the Secret Service agents meet?
Yeah, big picture-wise, I mean, it's accomplished through using up-to-date modern IT types of tools, kept up with the latest patching and software updates as soon as they're made available. But also say, too, I've learned this, but I still think it's true today. Most organizations don't use the full capability or capacity of the tools that they buy. And I know we're probably just as bad at that as well, but we're working to get up to speed on everything. So, for example, we have Tool A, but it does a certain amount of things, but we use it for one thing. So why aren't we're paying for it, why aren't we using it to the full capability and the capacity? I also reduced the number of systems administrators by like 85%. So we did a clean scrub of that. We have an up-to-date patching plan now. And I think the other key is training and education of the workforce.
I want to go back to the training and education piece, but let me talk about using tools for more than one thing, or you know, they have multiple capabilities and you're using, how are you ensuring you guys are doing that? Do you have, if you want, inventory with a plan that says this tool does you know, these five things and we're only using it for two of them? So how do we get those other three capabilities going? How are you going about that?
Several ways. One, I have some very smart people that work for me, so I'm very fortunate about that. But two is, so we'll sit down and ask ourselves, this tool does 10 things. Are we using all 10? Then they'll say, no, we're using two because I don't either have the resources to do the other eight or we don't know how to. So then we'll go to the next option is we'll bring in the vendor and the vendor will show us how to use the other eight. So that's one good example. And then I do my own research to make sure that we're getting the bang for our buck. And then I have an open door policy with vendors that if the tools I'm using, I'll meet with them regularly, their leadership and their engineers. And I'll bring my smart engineers in and then we'll, you know, put our heads together and decide or figure out how to best utilize the product. And then we're also getting heavily involved in continuous diagnostics mitigation right now. So that's one of my biggest projects ongoing right now is the CDM piece.
And I know DHS, the agency versus the part of the DHS that's running CDM has been one of the first ones out the gate. I know it can get sensitive, but are you starting to see some of the benefits from CDM?
Yes.
And can you talk about it at a high level in what ways? Are you getting better data, different types of data, or are you more secure in the systems? Can you give me a sense?
Well, one of the pieces I think is good is the data leakage protection. And then actually, big picture-wise, one, knowing what's on the network, two, realizing who's actually on the network, and then three is what's going on the network.
You sounds like you just told me what phase one and two are all about. That means DHS is doing a good job educating you.
Yeah, and you know, I'll put a plug in for DHS headquarters. We all work very well together to include the other CIOs and the other components. So we all get along pretty well. We share a lot of information.
Very nice. That was going to be my next question, but instead we're going to take a quick break. My guest is Kevin Nally, the Secret Services Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Kevin Nally, the Chief Information Officer at the Secret Service. Kevin, we're talking beforehand a lot about this idea of cybersecurity, and one of the main goals for you around cybersecurity was workforce training and education. And we've seen over the years the increase in spear phishing and other types of attempts to get into a network hackers are using. Talk a little bit about that training and education of the Secret Service's workforce.
We developed a course, online course, to take in terms of cyber security and spear phishing and phishing and what to look for and what not to do and what to do. And then we ran a phishing exercise internal to the organization. And it was interesting. Some people did actually click on the link. I think it was more out of curiosity than it was out of ignorance. But we do that and we'll do that several times throughout the year. We also offer courses up to people to send employees to courses, and then we have certain software tools to look for phishing and spear phishing emails.
Now, when you talk about the internal phishing exercise, we've heard that a lot. Did you feel pretty good about it, that most people understood it, or was it, you know, some did, some didn't?
No, I felt really good about it. It was less than 100 people that actually clicked on the link. So divide that in the total number of employees, it's very negligent, and honestly, my gut tells me that it was more out of curiosity than it was anything else.
And I know that talking to some people in the security community, some of the people within the intelligence community, they say, you know, Some studies have shown 80 to 90% of all successful ways to get into a network is by as simple as phishing. So if you can educate people against it, you know, not to click on things you're not expecting, that seems to be, you know, 9/10 of the battle, so to speak. The other piece of workforce education is your own workforce within the CIO's office. How are you addressing that, whether it's for cyber or whether it's for other things like Agile?
You mean for training?
Yeah, training and ensuring that the skill sets in your office, the CIO's office, your employees have what they need. Are you guys looking at that in any new ways?
Yes, I have a training education budget within my own office of the CIO, and we spend every dime of it. We use various organizations like the National Defense University, the Information Resource Management College over there, Eisenhower School, AFSEA courses, SANS training, Cisco training, Juniper training, Microsoft training. The training that's out there is we encourage our folks to take an active role in. And within the Secret Service, the Assistant Director for HR is working up a what we call, or we're calling an APT career track, which is APT is the Administrative Professional Technical people that are not 1811s or UD officers. So we kind of support, we're in a supporting, to supported role. So she is working on a career track for all APTs and various, all the fields. So it's the training education here is taken very importantly.
I think it's impressive that you have a budget and you spend your budget. I think those are the two keys. Did that surprise you when you came in? Because I know in the military, it's well assumed that there's a big training budget, but not necessarily in the civilian world all the time.
No, I wasn't surprised, but it wasn't being used much. So we have a draft training plan for different types of specialties, but we're finalizing that, and then that's one of the things we look at in terms of for promotions, et cetera, have they taken advantage of the training. So we encourage them to take the training, even if it's a matter of not being here at work, but they're actually getting trained and educated.
And do you feel like currently you have enough staff that if you had to send one or two people off to training every other week or every couple of weeks, every month, that you wouldn't necessarily feel too much of an impact on your staff in terms of getting IT priorities done?
Correct.
The other piece of that is the staff itself. The innovation is a big deal. We talked a little bit about innovation. Are you promoting innovation within your staff as well? We talked about Agile. That's one of those innovative things. But what about innovation more broadly to look at technologies or processes?
Yes, we have stood up what we call ERIC. It's called Enterprise Research Innovation Center here within the building. What we do is we look at new technology, we test the technology, we evaluate it, we make sure it can be integrated into our networks, do user testing with it, user acceptance with it. So we'll bring in agents and UD officers that would actually be using the equipment to say, hey, is this something you might find of value? Can it help you in your job, et cetera? So we have the ERIC built in here. And then also out at RTC, you're probably familiar with the Security and Incident Modeling Lab. You know, it assesses technologies to develop simulated training exercises for our protective detail teams, tactical response units, and counter-surveillance units. And it also employs modeling and simulation for planning and analysis. So that's beneficial out there at the Raleigh Training Center as well.
And from a CIO's perspective, it sounds like ERIC is something that you support, but the RTC, the Security Incident Modeling Lab, do you support that too, or is it more you're providing the infrastructure that runs on top of?
Providing the infrastructure.
So as you improve the infrastructure, we talked about obviously the EC effort, that's also going to benefit some of the modeling and training, give them more tools potentially?
Correct. Jason, the ERIC piece, the Innovation Center here, even though my office is building that out, we're doing that to support the agents. It's not, you know,
right,
it's not for internal fun stuff. It's like to benefit the agents out in the field.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, talking to CIOs, and especially in the national security and the law enforcement area, everything the CIOs do is to support the agents in the field. As we talked about very early, it's rarely a technology for technology's sake anymore, or should never have been. General Nally, we're almost out of time. Before I let you go, let me just ask you, a lot of vendors do listen to the show. What kind of advice do you have for them if they want to reach out to you, if they want to work with the Secret Service? How do you like to be approached? Give me what's some good advice for vendors?
I think you know me well enough. I'm always open to discuss new technology with vendors. Sometimes I don't get the chance to meet with them personally, but I will make sure that someone on my staff does. And anytime I can, I will meet with them. And then for the current contracts that we have, I do meet with their senior leadership probably on a quarterly basis just to go over things, make sure we're both synced up. And then not just for me, but I want my people to stay abreast of what the trends are and to always be open. And as you well understand, we may not have the money under a CR, but we're willing to listen and see what we can work out in the future.
Very good. Great advice. And I think vendors appreciate when you have that open door policy, but you have to be clear of what they want to bring to you. At the same time, you talked about the CR, which is every agency's facing. There's also a hiring freeze, but you guys are exempt from that hiring freeze. Talk a little bit about your needs in terms of people and potential reasons to come work for you.
I need lots of people. I actually have 60 vacancies right now, both in radio, called 0391 as a career field, and then the 2210s, some cybersecurity folks. But this is a really easy place to work for someone transitioning out of the military. Matter of fact, I just picked up a lieutenant colonel out of the Air Force that just retired as my telecommunications branch chief. He just, like, day one stepped in and figured it out, and he's on a roll. So, but we are exempt from hiring. We can hire. We're in the process of hiring, and this is an extremely rewarding and satisfying place to work because of the people and the mission. I'm happy every day I go home, and I feel like I've actually accomplished something or provided support or value to someone that needed it.
There's nothing better than that when it comes to a job. So it's great to hear, sir, and I really do appreciate your time today. This has been a fascinating conversation. My guest has been Kevin Nally, the Secret Services Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us.
Thanks, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.